Welcome to the Experience Focused Leaders Podcast. My name is Alex Shevelenko. I'm CEO and founder of Relate2, and we are on a mission, both with the podcast and with Relate2, to bring the most important ideas to life. And how do we do that? We do that through amazing, immersive, engaging experiences that move your organization forward, move your customers forward, and move us as a society forward. So if you love ideas, if you love bringing these ideas to life, stick around. Also, at the end of the podcast, we'll reveal how you could potentially be a guest speaker on the podcast as well. Let's get started. Welcome to Experience Focused Leaders. I am delighted to introduce you to Eric Carlson, President and CEO of Notified, a leading technology partner for investor relations, public relations, and all communications professionals. He brings over 15 years experience in private equity, M&A, strategic funds, finance, and most recently, as discussed, Eric has just become a dad right after becoming a CEO. Welcome to the
pod, thank you, Eric. Thank you, Alex. I think the last of those is the most important promotion.
Well, that's why we figure we gotta start with where it matters. But like, let's begin with the combination. So you're brand new CEO. Obviously, fortunately, you've kind of led various other functions. Yes. Within Notified before that, so it's not a brand new start. And then brand new dad. How do you juggle this? I think everybody wants to figure this out. I don't think everybody had been, even the fathers and the mothers among us maybe weren't CEOs of a large organization at the time when they had a baby. Yeah. So maybe let's describe the size of Notified and, the scale, and then your experiences juggling these two magical.
And I'd be kidding anyone if I said after three short months that I've completely figured it out, but it's been a wild ride and a wild journey, and certainly a adjustment. Anyone who's not a parent, regardless of the feedback people give you, cannot prepare you for the day when your child is born and everything changes, right? And as I look back, and I'll kind of give you an analogy for my career, a story for my career first. I've held a lot of different leadership positions, certainly over the last 10 years, and I remember one of the most naive things that I assumed. I was CFO at the time and had taken on a broader role to COO. This was probably 2021. And I was managing already a broader global organization of about 85. And at the time was going to take on another 500 individuals, which was kind of global operations. Today, we're about an organization of 1,100 globally across 17 countries. And I remember saying to someone, well, I've managed 85, I can manage 500. And the reality was that was an absolute mistake of an assumption. And the reason being is, not only was it a much more geographically diverse workforce, but also, right, I really had to change my style and change the way that I engaged with employees. When you think about it, working with people who have an accounting or a finance background, they're not to say everybody's the same, but they all kind of have the same background. They're financially minded. They're kind of fit within a certain box. Spreading that out and figuring out how to tailor your management style to something that's much more broad, much more deep, much more diverse was a really big learning experience for me. And as I think about that formative time of scaling, professionally as an executive, it really, revolved around me trusting people and centering myself around or in the middle of people that I really trusted to be that conduit, to be that voice, to be that translation layer between the strategy I might have had and then really figuring out how that resonated at the ground level. The parallel to, becoming a dad is you have to have a trusted network, right? And at the end of the day, my first trust and the person I couldn't do it without is my wife. But having family in the area, having friends in the area, being able to lean on colleagues so that I can make a conscious effort to shut down at 6 o'clock in the evening, make it home for, bath time and the last bottle and then pick it up makes a really big difference. And so I feel fortunate enough. We waited a long time to have kids, but part of that was creating that network So that when I did have a child, I felt like I had a support network that I could step into and I could really be present. And I'm still practicing presence with purpose, but present when I'm home, so that I might not be spending a tremendous amount of time, but when I'm home in those 2 or 3 hours in the evening, that's my time to really enjoy and get to bond and create a relationship with my daughter. And then when I'm at work, I'm at work. And so it's really being present with purpose. And then I think building a network that you can really rely on. So that's been my learning at least, but I'm still figuring it out 90 days in.
Well, that's brilliant. I do believe that we kind of have this interesting assumption that we as parents help our kids grow up. And my realization has been after three kids and a relatively minor role in contributing to their growth, besides the initial stages. The beautiful thing is being a parent helps you grow up.
100%, 100%. And it's really interesting. I read a Harvard Business Review article a few weeks ago that it is better to work for CEOs with daughters. And so I've already asked my team, have you seen the difference? Apparently they haven't yet, but I said it's early days, so we'll see.
I love your oozing energy. It's good. It's good. It's good. It's
Yeah.
great. Great to feel. Listen, well, let's talk about the baby called Notified. It's a you just joined the bigger family. I've met the CEO of EQ. Tell us a little bit about that acquisition, and what are the opportunities and the challenges that you see,
Yeah. Yeah.
emerging from that.
Absolutely. So, approach this kind of two ways. I think first, the excitement I have for the fit in the marketplace. And I'll be honest, Equiniti, at least for most of us in the US, is not a very well-known brand. And so I think that's one of the opportunities we have. It is one of the largest and one of the kind of two primary share registers and transfer agents of the world, meaning they really power the public markets. When you think about who owns your share, making sure that shares are delivered, share plans are administered appropriately. And I think what's really exciting is when you look at the overlap with a company that powers capital markets and public markets and the types of communication solutions that we provide, which are really, geared towards engaging with the capital markets, there's a really, we start to build, I think, a really exciting view of what an integrated single pane of glass can mean for buyers. And at the end of the day, doesn't matter what I think, it really matters what the market thinks. And I was really encouraged talking to customers, in the first 30 or 60 days after Equiniti acquired us, in just hearing from IR professionals and CFOs, this just makes sense. And the reason it just makes sense is because they're now viewing as a single provider, the combination of Notified and EQ, as an organization that has the intelligence of who owns your equity, who owns your shares, who should you target and go after, and then the ability to actually action on that, whether it's through targeting and investor intelligence, or all the way to the communication aspect of really tailoring the way that you engage with investors in the market. It's still early days. I think we are, in the midst of, storming, forming, and norming, as it were, and finding our culture and building our story. But I think 2026 is going to be transformative, not only for our business, but then for the market as we bring some of those advancements and that integration and product to bear.
And for those in our audience that are not as familiar as was notified, there are some brands
Yeah.
that you own that they're maybe more familiar with.
Yeah.
Well,
Yeah.
introduce this to us and like a little bit of the backstory where you were part of a broader, part of the other ecosystem, other players in the ecosystem, so that people kind of recognize how important you
Yeah.
are, because I don't think everybody is, maybe they're
And it's
using
a,
it but are not aware of it as
and
well.
it's a, and it's a, and it's a great point and one that we continue to work on building brand awareness in the marketplace. Look, I was the CFO of Notified for 5 or 6 years when we went through three brand changes. And so nobody appreciates the disruption like me because I had to do the paperwork. Look, it's an
Three different
amalgamation.
branding agencies, that was money
Branding
well spent.
agencies, changes in legal entities. We became a joke in the marketplace for a long time, but that's what happens when you're, owned by a holding company and owned by private equity. There are dynamic changes, and I think we've landed on the brand, and we're really focusing on building brand awareness. So I appreciate the question. Look, you mentioned leading IR and PR communications provider, but what does that really mean? We service two primary buyers, public relations and investor relations, and we've done that over the years by building on, I think, world-class assets that we've acquired from a number of different organizations. There's heritage in this business from legacy NASDAQ, from Thomson Reuters, from Marketwired in Canada. And really what we're endeavoring to do is take the GlobeNewswire brand, which many recognize, and build on that heritage and that network, broader communication solutions. So for PR, that means not just distributing over the wire, but really thinking about how do I take core content and distribute much wider, meeting my audiences where they are? It means bringing PR measurement to bear and media contact databases so that you can target journalists. And on the IR side, it's really everything soup to nuts that you need to communicate with the market. And practically what that means is, we have 4,200 customers we support that we deliver IR website hosting and provide content strategy around. We deliver earnings events, AGMs, investor days, and then certainly do regulatory filings and press releases as it relates to things like earnings announcements, director announcements, and other announcements that you deliver to the market in a corporate setting. So we really feel like we are the one-stop shop that covers public relations and investor relations. And increasingly, I continue to be bullish about that combination because we're starting to see those teams work much, much closely together in the corporate ecosystem. And in fact, I had the opportunity to meet a client last week, and she has actually taken on the role or dual role of corp comms and IR, and that's becoming more common, I think, in both industries.
Yeah, and I agree with you, Lynn, for the sake of some of Relate2AI customers that are listening into this, one of the contexts of why I'm excited to have Eric on the call here is that they power the IR sites for some of our shared customers. So the customer has an annual report, a sustainability or ESG report. They want to leverage the infrastructure that is provided by Notified, but they also want that to be more than a downloadable PDF or just a hosted PDF. And so they run that through Relate2. That becomes, AI ready, more engaging, richer experience that is discoverable by your AI answer agents, like Perplexity or OpenAI. And so it's delivers more value, but we don't want to be hosting the entire IR website, and we don't want to be providing the full range of services that Notify does. So that's a fit in. And then we noticed that, to your point, Eric, IR and PR teams sometimes roll together. Certainly they talk to each other. Certainly there's somebody in branding that kind of czars them and tells them this is the standard. And those people are also our customers. And then they say, well, we have started with the annual report because obviously it's the most important document for our organization. But then, we have this branding report that is our big PR event and big brand story narrative. Like, let's take that report and also run that through. And then that sort of starts to work together. And once you have the people, to your point, that can sort of support both with both functions, it's great because there's a natural synergy. So I love your position, and we fully see this happening in the market as well.
I totally agree. And look, we were talking before we even jumped onto the podcast about, big synergy, I think, between our two organizations, but also the opportunity out there. There's so much work put into those annual reports, and any of your listeners, any of your customers know that better than anybody. The reality is we're, as an organization, as an industry, as, a community, are not taking advantage of all of that work to the highest degree because the concept of being able to, chunk that up or splice that up into atomized content to use for campaigns or meet audiences in different places, whether that's a social card for LinkedIn or figuring out how to be more engaging on an earnings call or at an investor day or during an AGM is all, I think, white space, certainly in the US and Canada, as it relates to this content that's being provided. I think, you know, Europeans are probably better and a little bit further ahead just because there's been so much focus around the annual report for much longer. But I think it's a real greenfield opportunity in the industry.
Well, look, I'm having worked with some Europeans, I think there's still plenty of opportunity around the world. They invest more maybe in creating the content, but that doesn't necessarily get truly automatized because the structure is set up that you just end up getting random links that don't feel connected. And so I think there's still opportunities, you know, around the world. And I think one of the themes that I love that you brought up the word atomized content. I don't think people in non-regulated world care as much about that, but us that serve that market can realize that there's this really interesting challenge of how do you deliver something deeply personalized and relevant to a particular individual at a particular point in time, right? No brainer, right? But then this is the then. If that is a random piece of content that is sort of isolated from everything else and it's just an image somewhere and you can't do anything with that image, then you're hoping and praying that somehow somebody's going to download that PDF or save that image and remember it. And the opposite is like, what if it's connected within the broader context and tissue of your IR side or
I agree.
Broader report. And so you're not only able to get this attention and relevance, but you're able to say, okay, we take that little piece of attention. And then if you're interested, we expand it and we go beyond that and we draw you in and we create a richer experience. We get more of your mind share. We tell more of our, you know, equity story or brand story. And I somehow fear that when corporate folks try to mimic the whatever is happening in TikTok right now, and it was our cousins and in the kind of more brand and consumer marketing communications world, they're missing an important beat, which is you're supposed to build trust. You're not just
That's
supposed
right.
to get some message out there and spray and pray that it sort of works over time. Your audience is so valuable that any 1 ounce of their attention, if you could draw them in, is priceless. And I feel like somehow that there's still a gap in people figuring that out. What's your take on that?
I think that's true. I think, you know, we also have to remember that the audience that most are engaging with, you know, in our community are more discriminate as well. And so some may look at the TikTok type content and automatically dismiss it. I think the real magic and the real art is figuring out, you know, how do you earn that engagement? How do you get the attention? And then when you earn it, what do you do with it? Right. And really thinking about from a communications plan and, you know, an investor strategy plan or investor management strategy plan, what are those consistent themes that you're telling, whether it's, you know, across 2 quarters or across 4 quarters or across 3 years, that you're really going to go back to as signposts and say, I got your attention on this. You're now engaged with my brand, my equity as an issuer. I'm going to pull you back to the story that I've been telling authentically in a trusted way, quarter over quarter over quarter, so that it doesn't feel like it's marketing, but it actually feels like you're pulling people into the direction and strategy of where you're going as an organization. That's what builds trust. It's that repetition. It's that authenticity. And it's the authority to say, we set this target out, whether it's a 3-year plan or a 5-year plan, we're going to continue to communicate on this transparently and consistently. And hey, investor, as you see an update, and it might be a flashier update in order to re-engage you or get your engagement again or earn your attention, you're going to come back to the same story and you're going to see that we're executing on that strategic roadmap. That promise of delivery and commitment of delivery and execution is what builds long-term investors.
Absolutely. And you know, one of the things that, you know, I would love to get your take on is, how are you thinking about the investor days? So like, I think this is where you launch our 5-year or 10-year kind of plan. I love the that typically that is the opportunity to really show the depth of the organization. So you fly out all your executive team members, you pay your designers and agency people a lot of to bring and make the slides consistent across, 250 page assets. They are t You can't do them every 6 months or every quarter, obviously,
No,
because
no.
it's a huge investment. But then they kind of fade away at times, right? Like, so you're doing some interesting things and bringing them to life. We're doing some of that. What's your take on how do people think about the ROI around that investment, and how can we help leverage that further? Because I think it's one of those good intentions, but I'm not always sure it works as well as it could for the market. What's your take?
Yeah, I think the ones that we've seen customers do that stand out and really become, turning points or bellwether points for that organization and an industry is when there's some type of catalyst or major change that is a springboard to bring people together or say, this is a new chapter in this organization. Could be M&A, right? We talked about M&A before. Could be a new CEO or a new leadership team. Could be a tectonic shift in the industry. And I think it somewhat goes back to what we were just talking about with what do you do when you earn that engagement? You're spending a tremendous amount of money typically, especially if you do this in person and fully physical to bring together people from all over the world, not only your side, but it could be buy and buy side as well. And when you have them in the room, how are you really taking advantage of that investment? It really needs to be focused on, we are here. This is the story of why we need to change, or something has happened to us and we have changed. And then this is the story of where we're going. And at the end of this destination, if you stick with us, right, this is what you're going to get, right? And typically that what you're going to get is value creation. And so really being able to articulate what are the drivers, what are the core levers of value creation, and making sure that as you articulate those on a 3 or a 5 year horizon, that you're then taking that back and that message and that story and that corporate narrative isn't dying at that event or dying in that room,
That's right.
but it's back to what I mentioned. It's how do you make sure that those KPIs are actually something that you're reporting on and those themes aren't changing quarter to quarter? The numbers will certainly change, but you have to be able to tell that story in a cohesive way so
So it's a
that
framing. It's you're basically setting the frame for why? People love a story? Is that like as simple as
it.
that? Like even
I mean,
investors, we all love a story.
we're people at the end of the day, right? We want a story, we want a why. We've all seen Simon Sinek start with why. And at the end of the day, we want to know that it's going to end up well. We want there to be a happy ending and a good ending. And so starting with what that ending looks like, and then making sure as you're going quarter to quarter, you're chapterizing that. And by the way, if there's a big inflection point 2 years from now, maybe you accomplished a foundational part of that strategy that gets you to your 5 or your 10 year vision. That's another great time to bring people back into the room and say, this really matters. We accomplished this. Let's celebrate a win, but then also refocus on the work left to be done for the rest of our strategic journey.
It's funny when I reflect on when we were starting out, where we were getting a lot of inbound interest, where we weren't even looking to talk to anyone. We saw this huge pain for organizations in life sciences. And why? Because they don't have the numbers yet, right? And so they really need a much deeper story. They still need to provide evidence for the more technical, like scientific investors that are kind of like that need to know that, because that's an industry where evidence really matters. But the storytelling is a super critical art. And so if we are able to abstract, because the numbers, you can't always control them. You can try at times, right? Like you could do a lot of, there's a lot of interesting things that can be done there, but still the underlying narrative is where the premium and the alpha opportunity can lie until you get the numbers worked out.
I
And so
totally
then,
agree. Any emerging industry, your biggest currency is trust. And how do you build trust? It's telling the same story over and over with, things that you can point back to show the progress, but being consistent and building that authenticity and communicating directly, which it sounds like, Relay2 is a really big part of.
I think one of the things that we talked about that you're doing and working on, and we're working on in parallel, is making that story multimodal, making it fit in, you know, because the way, and you brought up this point that you need to know who your shareholders are. Duh, sounds obvious everywhere else, but like, you know, kind of start with the audience and work backwards, right? But for and it's sort of a foundational of communication science that you want to work there. But at the same time, because companies, they have their guidelines, their stories, they tend to be sometimes internally driven. And one of the obvious things is that, look, you brought up, like, some people want like a snippet at this point in time, that some people want the broader story, some people want video, some people are text driven, some people are linear, some are know exactly what they want, and they really want the absolutely don't want linear because that's a waste of their time. And so they're like control F gurus in the old world, but so that there's this variety of learning styles. And I'm curious, if that seems like that's a big part of your approach in providing different mediums across PR and IR for your audience. Tell me more.
I think it has to be, you know, and we'll talk a little bit about the shift from SEO to AEO or AI search, but you know, there's a couple reasons for that. A lot of times, I think the biggest fallacy is, I was talking to an IRO about this last week. The biggest fallacy is, well, you know, all of that really polished content could be, by the way, amplified video on, you know, your LinkedIn company page. Well, that's really geared towards the retail investor. And does the retail investor really move the needle? Shouldn't I focus on the analyst? Those are going to be the 5 to 10 people that call me after the earnings call, and we're going to get into the detail. And so why do I need something that's polished? And you know, the reality is when we go out and we poll attendees of conference calls, which by the way, the majority of attendees are analysts, 80% want key takeaways ahead of the actual earnings call, right? They want to know that there is a deck appended or 5 slides appended or some visual that is appended to something as simple as a press release or an earnings announcement that is a guidepost towards what they really should focus on or what the company believes are core KPIs and core statistics. I think even beyond that, right? And again, we'll get into AI search, making sure your content is visible in different places, in different channels that rank, you know, higher or lower within kind of the hierarchy of where AI search goes really matters. And it matters more than ever before. I was at a conference 2 weeks ago with a partner that we recently announced, Profound, Zero Click. They did a tremendous conference in New York. They're going to be doing an event in London coming up soon. And one of the statistics that stuck out to me most poignantly was if you do an overlap of content that is surfacing in AI search today versus content that's searching in traditional Google search, there's less than 19% overlap, which means that your job as a communicator and the focus on being able to meet audiences where they are, think in a multimodal way, think about ways that you optimize content for different channels really matters more than ever before because what worked for traditional SEO, what worked for traditional visibility, what has always worked or worked to reach a subset of analysts in the community is changing. And so if you're not developing and changing and evolving your communication strategy, you're going to be left behind.
Yeah. Well, let's dive into this AI search. We obviously see it, you know, from related perspective. We see that, you know, even within the old school search, nobody's figured out how to properly extract, you know, data from PDFs, despite claims that there's some extraction, just because nobody figures out how to turn it into HTML and it ends up this sort of bubbly, blobby mess. It's a loss. It's even more of a problem, I think, in the new world. So this is something we're very excited about. You've been, you know, I think pushing the press release as a natural vehicle for trusted content to be absorbed by engines. Tell us more about that. Tell us about this partnership and what results you're seeing.
I mean, I think, and you know, for me, it's really interesting to reflect on, especially just having a daughter 3 months ago. I am the last generation that grew up without the internet. And when you think about the change we've seen in our lifetime, right? You went from going to a library to choose content and research to digitizing that library and being able to walk through these virtual halls by searching in Google or traditional search. And the shift now is you do away with the search altogether. In fact,
Yeah.
you've just enabled essentially a virtual librarian or an agent to go
Yeah.
out and pull that information for you and serve you the content. And what's both the opportunity and really, I think, frightening in a lot of ways is the content that they're serving, might not always be the most appropriate content based on what you've published as a brand. And in order to really optimize how you're thinking about it, you really have to think about a couple drivers today. It's certainly authority, it's structure, it's things like recency, how frequent and fresh is this article, and its originality. And when I think about authority and structured data in particular, the press release scores really highly on both of
Yep.
those. A lot of people don't appreciate that, AI search and LLMs prioritize certain types of content differently. Not surprisingly, encyclopedic content is at the top.
Yeah.
Owned digital matters, right? So when you think about annual reports that are being published, where that annual report is sitting, is it on an owned, website or company website? Is that being syndicated to blogs? That all matters. And then it's high authority digital properties. And one of the highest authority digital properties is the newswire for a couple reasons, notwithstanding the fact that there's editorial review. And
Yeah.
so the newswire scores extremely high, often higher than some really well-known digital news properties that you might assume are better to land earned media. And so the combination of that kind of authority of the newswire, plus the fact that the structured data of a press release is really, really advantageous for
Yeah.
large
Yeah.
language models. It's there's a data schema, right? You're talking about a
Yeah.
company name, a ticker. You might
Yeah.
mention a CEO or revenue. There's clean declarative sentences, right? It's punchy. It's not long and verbose. It's not editorial. There's always embedded links and references. And then what we've done as an organization is really focus on what does the machine want to read and ingest. So you talked about the challenges with PDFs. We've actually gone and looked at JSON data and HTML data and said, how do we structure this so that the machine or the LLM is ingesting this and prioritizing this content because it actually speaks in the same language. So things like metadata and very personalized
Yeah.
tags, things a lot of people don't think about, like semantic URLs. Make sure that your press release provider is actually putting the title of your headline in the URL because all of that matters. And I think what we've seen and have been really impressed with is the number of times press releases are getting cited in a really short period of time. We announced, and I teased it before, this exclusive partnership with Profound, which is a brand perception tool, I think the leading brand perception tool for AI search. Our partnership allows PR and IR professionals to really reference with high authority how many times was that press release or that announcement actually cited within an AI search model, so that that your message is getting out there. And what we've seen, and it's been a few short weeks, only about 30 days in partnership with Profound, is the average number of citations in just the first 24 to 48 hours for some of these releases is somewhere between 250 and 300 citations. What that practically means is that your press release, that content that you distributed, is influencing at least 250 to 300 answers that people are searching for in terms of interaction. And that direct attribution for someone in PR is really refreshing because it's always been kind of this nebulous scoreboard of traditional views or, what is my reach or what is my exposure? But there was never that direct connection. And so I think it's a really exciting time for the industry. And I think we continue to try and push ahead to say, how do we make sure PR professionals can take advantage of this new landscape we're all operating in?
I love it. A couple of quick observations. So there's another Shevelenko, my brother Dimitri, is a chief business officer at Perplexity. And they're like, so one of the interesting things, like watching closely their growth, is that their biggest initial value prop was literally going and saying, we're just going to search through the trusted sources, right? And then they've done such a great job with it that I think everybody else had to copy that and actually. Now OpenAI is doing that, maybe to a lesser degree, but I think there's so the press release powered by Eric and his family, is actually that trusted source, as we discussed. And then on the one of the interesting things that I think we've noticed that we've been doing from day zero is that the there's almost two audiences for any content,
Yeah.
right? Like I think there is
Yeah.
a there's what you send to the AI algorithms, and that is actually we send a very different file to Google and to Bing
Yeah.
and and Brave and whoever the scrapers are, than the one that we're consuming. Because the humans need one thing, the algorithms need another thing. Yes, there's some overlaps, and I think it's
Yeah.
great when you don't do that because obviously the folks that are smart inside of these organizations, they actually measure real engagement, real consumption, real time
Yeah,
spent.
yeah.
So you have to be both, but it is very interesting that you need to do that legwork. And you're absolutely right that there are some mediums that are just better suited for providing value to both the machines and to the humans. And
Yeah,
you need to continue to
I
elevate
agree,
on
and
that.
I think everybody needs to think about it as just another form of translation. We've all done communication plans where the base might be in English, but we're communicating, we're translating to French. We need to think about how do you translate to the language that LLMs
How
and
do you
machines really.
translate it with love, the French that they as somebody
There
married
you
to a
go.
French woman, I get to make fun of Gianzon a little bit, but yeah, but it's sort of, you're absolutely right. How do you do this? There's almost like the je ne sais quoi, this human touch is the one translation, and then there is the other translation,
Yeah,
like you said,
yeah.
that is like how do you make the machines really nail it so they don't have to think too hard and they trust the
And
source.
the human created content does matter. In fact, this morning I was looking at a study that was just released by a Graphite for Axios. And in 2025, the amount of human curated content actually now matches the amount of AI generated content, which is interesting. But what human curated content still has an edge on is, or generated content still has an edge on, is 86% of content rating in Google was actually still written by humans. And so it still very much matters, right? People want that authentic content. People want to consume human generated content, but there are ways to leverage AI content that actually is, might be partial for LLMs. And just thinking about that ecosystem and how you tailor your communication strategy really matters.
So on that note, right, like about we're talking about corporate storytellers,
Yeah.
what are opportunities to drive real impact? Because one of the things that worries me a little bit as a CEO, and somebody who's, helped launch the public listings for companies like
Yeah.
SuccessFactors in the past, is that the PR teams, the IR teams sometimes are not like the as capable of communicating the value of their activities. They are, they come with English major backgrounds oftentimes. IR is a little different, but still there's not as much dollars and cents
Yeah.
kind of
Yeah.
background. And I'm obviously a huge believer that this is important. And like you, I see there's a ton of evidence that when something is done professionally, it actually lifts up the analyst perception that the company whose annual report is amazing must have their shit together. And the most skeptical people will actually feel like
Yeah.
that they'll buy into the story, even despite
Yeah.
this what they would say officially that it doesn't matter to them or they're too clever for that. Everybody is biased. We're all
Yeah.
humans. So we have the data, we know this, we've seen this anecdotally, but I don't think that compared to maybe sales use cases, the average PR professional, IR professional is able to justify the
I
value
totally
of their investment.
I
What are you helping them? How do we help them
Yeah. Yeah,
kick
I
ass, get
totally.
promoted,
Yeah.
be the compounding value of their stock?
I totally agree. I'm gonna start with PR first because I think they're further away from being able to, directly demonstrate value. I think, IR for a long time, though it's been, somewhat dotted line, can certainly draw a correlation between stock movement following an earnings call, or if you're targeting certain investors and you get someone based on an interaction or a story to move the needle in terms of ownership, those are pretty hard metrics. I think PR has always been a soft metric, an influence metric. And like I mentioned, the scoreboard's changing. It used to be that we talked about these nebulous statistics and newswire analytics or PR analytics campaigns around potential reach, potential eyeballs. And you know, the numbers are so inflated because all it is potential. It doesn't really say, did your message resonate? You know, it might have landed at a certain journalist endpoint, or, you know, you might have earned media attribution at a news publisher, but what was the engagement? And I think for the first time, you know, there's a real opportunity for PR professionals to shift marketing dollars away from marketing towards PR. And it comes back to what I mentioned, which is really clear attribution for AI citations. And at the end of the day, right, AI is really a consumption model. The answers that AI models are providing typically are guiding you towards consumption or guiding you towards brand perception. In fact, one of the statistics I saw,
it's basically further for an ever, it's like the funnel is broken, right?
The funnel is changing. The funnel is shifting, right? Yeah. And you know, people are asking questions that have no purchase intent whatsoever. And I think a recent statistic I heard at an event about 2 weeks ago is roughly 40% of all prompt responses are returning a brand. And the example that was used is, you know, even someone complaining about a breakup, something that's non-commercial at all. If you do prompt engineering around relationship breakups, 25% or more were representing or recommending brands to people as part of the answers for their solution. And so these LLMs are really taking consumption to a whole new level, taking human issues and human emotions and trying to satisfy them by pointing you to brands and different consumer behavior. And so the impact, if you think about PR through the newswire, through high domain authority, through own channels, which all sits under PR today to influence that brand narrative for the next generation of search, actually has a much larger outsized impact on the performance of that company, because you're actually driving a consumption versus what was before kind of this nebulous brand perception and trying to create a culture of the brand so that when someone did see kind of traditional marketing or traditional SEO, they had a reference point and were more, you know, likely to click. But that was always softer. And so what I think we need to do as, you know, practitioners in the space and providers in the space is I need to work to build that new scoreboard for where the game is going, right? Being able to demonstrate the linkage between citation and purchase or content and citation so that they can walk into the CMO's office or the CEO's office and say, hey, look at me. I did this content piece. This content piece resulted in all of these citations. We saw that because of the number of citations that we got, our share of voice amongst the market increased. Mm-hmm. And as a result of that share of voice, we're now driving more inbound or increasing top of funnel, any of those metrics that are more traditional content marketing or growth marketing focused.
Got it. Okay, so that's point one. Now shifting to IR, if you're lucky, you're absolutely right. You get that direct relationship.
Yeah.
I'd say certainly on the communication side, it's not as clear cut, you know, which is probably maybe our bias.
Yeah.
But you've had this really interesting insight that, you know, through the combination with Akinity, you're able to have much better understanding of who are the shareholders effectively.
Yeah.
And then you can start saying, hey, we want the shareholders, we want to keep them. We want to shift to a different, more long-term base. You know, and then we adjust the communications for that. You know, how is that message? Is that like still a new message for the market to Grog? Is it really lending? You know, I certainly remember that was a big important thing to us when we were establishing a SaaS category. We were very particular about who we believe would be the right shareholders.
Yeah.
You know, for us, and so that did matter, and I think we were flying blind for the most part in terms of how to deliver that. What's your take?
Yeah, I think flying blind is a consistent theme. I think, you know, what I am very excited about, and I think will give us an upper edge in the market, is we'll be the only provider that actually has that real-time share registry or ownership data and can, you know, really compound that with the value of personalized outreach and really audience targeting and tailored communications. I think people today are using services that are directional at best if they're not comparing it or using the information that's coming from their TA or registry. And so what we're hoping to do is really, again, take that core data in with ownership, intelligence, and advisory on top, be a partner to issuers and say, if this is the objective, right, maybe it's long-term holdings or shifting to a long-term base, really help you understand amongst you and your peer set, who should you be targeting? And then if you're talking to that long-term base, that should inform your communication strategy. I mean, we'll go back to what we were talking about with the investor day. If you're trying to garner a long-term investor that holds a significant position, they should absolutely be in an investor day. So you're giving them that guidepost and that those chapters of that story that we talked about, versus if you're looking for someone that's short-term for a certain reason, or, you know, or you're trying to attract someone that might be interested in a short-term position to could be to offset other short-term holders. That's a very different model. And so I'm excited because I think we then put ourselves in a unique position to guide the dialogue or help shape and guide the dialogue through the communication strategy. We've always owned the pipes to deliver the communication, but I think really giving the context and helping IR professionals create that content that's going to be distributed through our pipes is really exciting. And that's where the value is, right? My biggest goal, and I tell my team this all the time, I want to move from just being a reliable communications partner to being an irreplaceable insights provider, right? I want to be that trusted partner and advisor to the IR office. And I think in doing so, you know, the hope is we will demonstrate higher ROI for IR teams. And in turn, they'll want to spend more on solutions because they're seeing value in the marketplace.
Well, and this may be as we wrap up and we can go back to the beginning, you know, 10 years from now, it's your daughter's 10 years birthday. Where's Notified, and what has been, you know, as she's able to say in a 10-year-old language, what has my daddy done to help, you know, bring Notified and the whole function of IR and PR world to the future?
Yeah, I love the lens, right? Because I tell everyone, if you can't explain something simply to a child, you don't understand it. And I think at the end of the day, it's really, how do I craft, target, and deliver or tell the story that my shareholders, my audience really wants to understand in a way that gets me the outcome that I want to achieve if I'm an issuer or a company, right? It's all about finding that audience, telling the story in their words, meeting them where they are, and then ultimately influencing that behavior so that, you know, you can drive growth in the industry, or, you know, build a shareholder base as an issuer, or increase your brand perception. And, you know, I hope 10 years from now, Notified is seen as the default brand in the marketplace to do that. Not because we have the best pipes, not because, you know, we have the best brand, but because we have a tool set and a solution that helps you do that quickly, easily, efficiently, and with purpose.
Beautiful. I think if your daughter learns from you, she's going to be getting a lot of toys, a lot of Mattel products coming her way, and whatever else she's interested. Well, thank you so much for joining us. How can people find you and Notified and engage with your services?
Yeah, absolutely. So visit us at www.notified.com. Connect with me on LinkedIn, engage. I'm a pretty active voice in the PR, the IR, and the AI community. And so looking forward to continue to broaden and expand my network. And Alex, I want to thank you for having me on today's podcast. I'm looking forward to connecting and looking forward to grabbing a bite when you're in New York next.
Thank you. It's been a treat. Welcome back. Alex Shevelenko here. Thank you so much for listening to Experience Focused Leaders podcast. You can learn more about us at podcast.relato.com. relyto.com. Obviously, we would love for you to send this to people that you know who would be great speakers, or just share the nuggets that you took away from this episode with your community on social. And you could learn more about what we're up to on relyto.com. You could certainly connect with me on LinkedIn, where it's just very easy to spell my name. You have to have a master's in Ukrainian. It's Shevelenko, Shevelenko. Would love to connect so that we can move together the way the world communicates about its most important ideas. Thank you for listening. We hope to see you next time.